McShane Bible Study, day 105, and we are starting in Leviticus 19. This is a cool chapter because it's kind of like, it's very similar to the Ten Commandments. What is that, Exodus 20? Somewhere around there. But it's different. There's a lot more commandments here. It feels like most, I don't know if every one of the commandments, especially the first few commandments, are very, they're all definite about, you know, worshiping the Lord in specific ways. And they're certainly not laid out like that here. But he does start out, the Lord speaking to Moses, says, "Speak to all the congregation of the people of Israel and say to them, you shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy." So he's... Whereas when he gave the Ten Commandments, it was basically about worshiping the Lord. He's here, it's a little more about community. Mm-hmm. Like, look, my purpose is not just that I be holy and you be a lowly people. My purpose is that you come to be my people so that you are holy as I am holy and all the world can see that. See that? Mm-hmm. And so holy means set apart from the world. And then, you know, he immediately goes into things. I think there's about three of them that are very much three of the Ten Commandments. And, you know, I'm not going to get into all of them, but some of the ones that stood out to me. Verse 9. "When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap your field right up to its edge. Neither shall you gather the gleanings after your harvest." So they would do their field, but they leave the edges and corners with the fruit on them, or grain or whatever, so that if somebody, a traveler is passing through, they would have something to eat on their way. Okay. It's kind of a nice thing to do for travelers, right? So how does this apply to us? It says, well...
Daddy, that means we should plant our backyard full of fruit trees and leave the edges so that if a traveler decides, let's take a detour into that backyard, they can take from the trees.
There you go.
Since they won't come, we can get those too.
Well, I think you're supposed to let them go bad here according to this. But so how does it apply to us? That in whatever we do, we should understand that we're doing it not just for ourselves, but for others as well, right? Mm-hmm. And see, in 13, it says, "You shall not oppress your neighbor or rob him. Wages of a hired worker shall not remain with you all night until the morning. You shall not curse the deaf or put a stumbling block before the blind, but you shall fear your God. I am the Lord." So he's given a lot of different examples about our interactions with others. He's saying, mm-hmm. don't get caught up in who you are, in what your rights are, in how... Don't get upset about how someone's treating you, or... You know, we can get all kinds of upset about different things, right? He said, fear me. Realize that I am the creator of everything, and I am with you, and I love you. Why would you get upset about these little things? Right? And let's see, 18, "You shall not take vengeance or bear a grudge against the sons of your own people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I'm the Lord." So I know Jesus talked about that as one of the main things, right? Mm-hmm. Again, not getting upset with others, but looking at them the way the Lord looks at them. Even if someone is doing all kinds of evil, and we don't maybe... You know, it's not wise for us to be hanging out with them. The Lord still loves them. Mm-hmm. They have just allowed, or, you know, whatever their situation, they've become filled with all kinds of evil. But they're someone that God made perfectly that is beset by sin. Those are two distinct things. You see that? So we don't get caught up in getting confused about that. We see the Lord as having made this person perfect and treating them as such, while at the same time being wise to the situation. Okay, that doesn't mean we're going to go hang out and do the evil things that that person is doing, right? We're not getting caught up in that way. But It means we're loving everyone with the Lord's wisdom. Make sense? Uh-huh. Yeah, I think that's all I highlighted there. And next we have Psalm 23 and 24. So 23, probably the most famous psalm. 24, I would say, is kind of more important for us. But 23 is awesome. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. So he's establishing God is God and I am his, right? Mm-hmm. And he his way that he leads me is good. And he leads me mm-hmm. into righteousness, right? Right standing with God. Mm-hmm. For even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. So he says, I've got trouble all around. There's great difficulties around me, right? But I don't fear any of that. I only fear the Lord. Like, the Lord is God. He's king. He's all powerful. And he's with me. Your rod and your staff. He disciplines me along the way with his rod. He leads me. He's got the staff of a shepherd, right? Of a king. He leads me and he comforts me. And so none of these evil things, none of these very difficult things in life can touch me, right? Even though I go through difficult times, he will bring me out of them. 5, you prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. So he said, there's enemies out there. There's difficulties in this world. But the Lord has established me. I get to sit at his table, right? Mm-hmm. My cup is overflowing. I'm anointed with oil. The oil, the wine, these are symbols of the prosperity and blessing of God. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. You see, his mind is always on the eternal greatness of God, the eternal mm-hmm. blessing of God. Even though he's clearly going through difficulties, he realizes those difficulties will pass. You know, you can imagine David being chased by people that were trying to kill him, being outnumbered and in trouble, and running, fearing for his life. But God's showing him, I'm with you. Don't worry about these things. And what? I mean, God was going to make him king, right? He's going to be one of the most powerful kings ever. At this moment, he's not experiencing that. He's experiencing difficulty in this world. But he is not living that way. He's living in the Spirit and saying, you're in control of all this. This may seem difficult, but you're going to bring me through, right? Mm-hmm. And then Psalm 24, it's a really important psalm for our day. This is coming into fulfillment. It starts out, the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, the world and those who dwell therein. For he has founded it upon the seas and established it upon the rivers. So similar kind of introduction, right? God is all powerful. Mm-hmm. He's in control. 3, who shall ascend the hill of the Lord? So who's going to come out Mount Zion and be with God? That's a good question, right? Don't we want to be the ones that go up there? Yeah. Who shall stand in his holy place? Well, the Holy of Holies, right? Who gets to be in the presence of God in his throne room? 4, he who has clean hands and a pure heart, who does not lift up his soul to what is false and does not swear deceitfully. So clean hands and pure heart, who we are internally and how we live in the world, what we do. That they're pure unto the Lord, right? Uh-huh. He will receive blessing from the Lord and righteousness from the God of his salvation. Such is the generation. So there's a coming generation. This was written thousands of years ago. He said there's going to be a generation mm-hmm. of those who seek him, who seek mm-hmm. the face of the God of Jacob. Mm-hmm. Well, I would tell you that that time has come. It's going to be a generation that says, I don't care what's going on in the world. Kind of like David was surrounded by enemies. He said, I don't care about that. I'm going to seek the Lord. Well, here in 24, he's telling us there's going to be a generation of people who seek the Lord. Well, what does that look like? 7, lift up your heads, O gates, and be lifted up, O ancient doors, that the King of glory may come in. Remember when Jesus talked about, and it was also a picture of Jacob. Jacob was just mentioned in the last verse. The picture of angels ascending and descending. Uh-huh. And Jesus said, was it Philip he was talking to? Someone, I don't remember. And he said, you'll see angels ascending and descending on the Son of Man, right? Mm-hmm. Well, what does that look like? It means he's a gate between the heavenlies, the throne room of God, and mm-hmm. this reality that's around us, right? Mm-hmm. This first heaven, this earthly reality. All of a sudden, he's become a gate. He was a gate between eternity and this temporal world we live in. Temporal means time, right? We live in time. Mm-hmm. Someday we'll be outside of time. And so he says, lift up your head, O gates, and be lifted up. So lift up your head, O gates. If we're a gate, mm-hmm. then he's saying, we have to say, I want this, Lord. I want eternity in me. I want you in me. I want your glory in me. I want to be made righteous and holy like you are righteous and holy, right? Mm-hmm. So lift up your heads. We have to want it. We have to believe in it. And we have to seek it. It's not enough to, you know, Jesus said, seek, ask, knock. Kind of the same thing. Want it, believe it, seek it. Mm-hmm. And then he says, and be lifted up, O ancient doors. So it means we can't do it ourselves. We have to want it, believe in it, and seek it, and he will do it. We can't do it on ourselves, right? We can't want it, believe it, seek it, but then go a way that's contrary to the way he's leading and accomplish it ourselves. It's impossible. Mm-hmm. But we do have to want it, believe it, and seek it. And then he will lift us up, O ancient doors, that the King of glory may come in. The King of glory, God himself, living fully in us. It's amazing, right? Mm-hmm. That's his plan and what he wants to do. Who is this King of glory? The Lord, strong and mighty. The Lord, mighty in battle. He overcomes all things. 9. Lift up your heads, O gates, and lift them up, O ancient doors, that the King of glory may come in. Who is the King of glory? The Lord of hosts. He is the King of glory. That's a pretty awesome, powerful thing, mm-hmm. right? That's what he wants. What did we just talk about in Leviticus? He wanted a people that are holy and set apart from the world, that have his fullness in them so the world can see who he is. Oh. He still needs this generation. And this that's what we get to see in our time. And then we move on to Ecclesiastes 2. And so as we just talked about, he sought God for wisdom, and God mm-hmm. said, because you have asked for wisdom, because most people in your situation would have asked for lots of money, lots of wives, lots of power, and a huge kingdom. A long life. Yeah, these sorts of things. Most people would have asked for that, but you didn't. You asked for, and this is important, this is the heart he wants us to have. You asked for the wisdom to be able to care for your people as a king. Mm-hmm. And since your heart, when you have anything offered, you can have anything, and what your goal is to take care of others as their king, mm-hmm. he says, because of this, I'm going to give you all those other things everyone else would have asked for. And so that's the heart of God, that we become transformed to be like him, and like we just talked about. And then he will use us to take care of his people so that more can enter in. We become a gateway, right? Mm-hmm. That's what he wants from us. So, you know, Solomon did this. He lived a long life. And he's saying there's the vanity to everything in life. And first he goes through, ESV calls it self-indulgence. He basically said, I went after everything the flesh could want, whether that's food and drink, whether that's women, whether that's building impressive things. You know, mm-hmm. he did it, all these things. Mm-hmm. And he said, in the end, none of it's worth anything. Mm-hmm. Right? Those things, the power he had and the impressive accomplishments and the delicious food and drink, all that kind of stuff, That's what most people are out there trying to get.
Mm-hmm.
Most everyone, you know, all the adults you encounter, that's kind of a big part of what they're trying to get. Solomon said, I had all that. And what I've realized is it's not really worth anything. All right? Mm-hmm. I don't know if I need to read the highlighted. I think I was just, yeah, he says, then I considered all that my hands had done and the toil I had expended in doing it. And behold, all was vanity and a striving after wind. And there was nothing to be gained under the sun. I like that, striving after wind. You can't catch the wind, can you? He says, even living wisely in the end, this no matter how wise you are in this world, mm-hmm. Your end is the same as a fool, right? So he says that was vanity. And then he comes to kind of a nice place in 24. There is nothing better for a person than that he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil or his work. This also I saw is from the hand of God, for apart from him, who can eat or who can have enjoyment? So he's basically saying, live life living the life God has given you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the most blessed life you can have. Make sense?
Uh-huh.
And we are moving on to 1 Timothy 4. And so he's talking about the last day. This is actually, again, another good thing for our day. In the beginning. Now the Spirit expressly says that in later times, some will depart from the faith by devoting themselves to deceitful spirits and teachings of demons. So he says, in the latter days, people will start going after all kinds of different demonic teachings. No one following demonic teachings knows that it's a demon.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems like a good. It seems like truth to the person that's following, but they've, for whatever reason in their heart or in their life or whatever, they've been in a place to be deceived. Maybe they just haven't experienced the truth of God yet, but whatever, he says that people will be going after all strange teachings. We see this in the church. There's all kinds of different crazy teachings in the church. And we definitely see it outside of the church, people going after all kinds of different ways of thinking and living. He said people who forbid marriage and require abstinence from foods that God created to be received with thanksgiving by those who believe and know the truth. There's a huge push in the world to try to get everybody to stop eating meat. Paul.
Right now?
Yeah, there's tons of people that are saying that they need to put rules in the world so that we can't eat meat anymore.
That's mean. Bacon's good.
Right. So, but Paul saw this. I mean, and it's not just that. There's other things, but that's a big one. It's a big push right now. There's a man named Bill Gates. Like, you know how you have Microsoft on your computer?
Mm-hmm.
He was the inventor of that. He's super rich, and he's in recent years, instead of just designing computer software, he's decided he wants to make the world in his own image. And just a few years ago, he was talking about, you'll never get people to stop eating meat, and he couldn't stop eating it because he loves a good burger. And now he's going around pushing this idea. They're collaborating with like a one world government type group of stopping this. I don't say this to scare you. They have no power at the moment, but they're pushing for it. You understand? Paul saw this coming exactly and told us about it 2,000 years ago. He says, for everything created by God is good, and nothing is to be rejected if it is received with thanksgiving, for it is made holy by the word of God and prayer. So they're being deceived by other teachings, other philosophies, because they don't know the Lord. It makes them feel they're basically worshiping something. They don't realize they're demonic principalities that are leading them. But it makes them feel important and like they're doing something good. And God made us all with a desire to worship Him. He made us with the capacity and the desire to worship. And the purpose for that was that we worship Him and be filled with His glory. But then Adam handed over the keys to Satan. And Satan said, I want to fill these people, not God. And so he's got a whole kingdom of demonic principalities, powers, authorities, and demons, which gladly take the place when we allow them to. And so people start, I just mentioned one. There are so many different crazy new philosophies and ways of thinking in the world. And if you can break them down and say, well, this is silly because if this happened, for instance, if they stopped doing meat, the world would turn to massive monoculture, strip farming, which would be horrible for the environment. Like I just happen to, it's an interesting thing I like to read about. It would be horrible for the environment. Also, they're pushing and.
What is that? Too many cows?
Yeah, well, because it just strips out. It makes all the fields the same. It just destroys the biodiversity of the area. So a lot of animals, they say they're good for animals, but of course there would be very few cows left. They would save a few because they wouldn't want them to go extinct, because that's another thing that they care about. But basically, they're close to extinction, right? No one was eating them. Mm-hmm. But not only that, all the little animals that live in, when we have a variety of different pastures and fields and that sort of thing, mm-hmm. There's a lot more variety of animals and bugs and all everything. Mm-hmm. When you strip it out and make it monoculture, you strip away all that biodiversity. But then also the stuff that he's pushing, and of course the media never tells you this when they tell you what Bill Gates or people like this are saying, but he owns stock in these things. So he's making money if he gets his way. And he's saying you need to eat these things like Impossible Burger, Beyond Burger, all these things which are fake food that are supposed to be like meat. But they, in the old days, when you had a veggie burger, there was real veggies. Mm-hmm. Now they're putting all kinds of weird chemicals. And we know that those chemicals are bad for us. Mm-hmm. But they're selling it as if it's good for us. So it's easy to break these things down, but those people are, we can do this in our own lives. I'm not trying to point out anyone as, because we can get caught up in our own religious ideas and get swayed by things just as easily as they can. So we have to always be on guard. Are we following a vain religion? Are we following the Spirit of the Lord? But people who don't know the Lord are extremely susceptible to that right now. Mm-hmm. And so you see all kinds of crazy ideas and philosophies taking root in people today. And so Paul said this would happen. And so it shouldn't worry us. It's just a reality. And what did we talk about earlier? Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, God will be with me. God wants to fill his people, his gates, with his glory. What's the purpose? So that all have the chance to see and know God. He says in Romans 8 that the entire creation trembles and shakes, waiting for the sons of God to be revealed. Mm-hmm. All of creation, the entire world, even the animals and the plants are waiting for the sons of God to be filled up with the glory of God, the wisdom of God, the truth of God, so that the right order can come to this world, right? 7, have nothing to do with irreverent, silly myths. Rather, train yourself for godliness. For while bodily training is of some value, godliness is of value in every way, as it holds promise for the present life and also for the life to come. So Paul says there's this way that you can live unto the Lord, be filled by the Lord, be transformed by the Lord, and that has value. Not just, if we exercise that, it's good value, right? It's a good thing to do. But he says, in the end, when you're dead and gone and you're in eternity, whether you exercise or not, like the shape of your old dead body doesn't matter anymore, right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of what Solomon was saying too. But if we exercise our spiritual lives, he says that has value both for now and eternity. And so you can participate in the fullness of what God is doing in your life and in the world. Make sense? Mm-hmm. That's all I have today. God bless you.
God bless you.